Welcome back to Issues Etc. It's the second hour. It's the second part of Open Lines. The phone numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. The decision of former Governor George Ryan in Illinois to commute 167 death sentences is probably one of the bigger stories in the news, and I imagine that it, well, I can only imagine what it will mean in the courts. There will certainly be challenges to this decision. Who knows what the legislature might do in response to something like this? It is his prerogative to do this. On this scale, I don't know if anyone, the framers of any state constitution, ever conceived of a governor exercising his prerogative on this scale, 167 commutations, all death sentences, in one day on Saturday. Do you agree or do you disagree with that decision? No big surprise, most seem to disagree. But maybe there are some out there who are listening who do agree. The phone numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. If you disagree, there may be differences among those who disagree on why they disagree with it. I'll try and remember, if I can, to fill you in on some of my thoughts about this before the hour is out. Maybe you believe, as Governor Ryan seems to believe, that the capital system, the death penalty system, whether or not you think the death penalty is right or wrong, that the death penalty system is error-prone. That's a concern I have. I am for the death penalty. I think there are good reasons to be for the death penalty, but I am also concerned that the administration of the death penalty be as flawless as possible. Not flawless, but as flawless as possible. After all, we are putting people to death. The government, I think, has that, I don't want to call it a right. The government has that power. I think it has it constitutionally. I think it also has it as a Christian from the perspective of Holy Scripture and Romans 13. Not bearing the sword in vain. But that does not relieve the government of the responsibility to rightly administer such a sentence. Correct? So maybe you agree that the system is error-prone, but you disagree with this mass commutation on the part of Governor George Ryan. What should he have done? That's what I want to know from you. What should he have done? If the system is irreparably broken and needs to be revamped or done away with, who knows? What should he have done instead of commuting 167 death row inmates? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. There was something else we were talking about, too, and that's those Choose Life license plates. Would you go to the trouble of getting one if you're an Illinois resident, if the legislature in this next session decides that the Secretary of State can issue them? They might cost a little bit more. The money goes for adoption services into a fund that is administered by the Secretary of State there in Illinois. Does not go to fight against abortion. Does not go to support pro-life groups. It goes to help the state in its efforts to encourage adoption. An alternative, one might say, to abortion. Would you go to the trouble of the expense of getting one? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Why? To make a statement? To help support adoption? Why? I mentioned this before the break. A New Jersey appeals court from Newark, New Jersey, according to the Associated Press. New Jersey prosecutors can bar overtly religious people from serving on juries. A state appeals court has ruled because it was a 2-to-1 decision. The case has a good chance of being heard by the state Supreme Court before any final decision comes down on this. The decision has also raised concerns among civil liberties groups. Now, listen up, because normally when we hear civil liberties groups, we think first and foremost of what? The ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union. And there are other civil liberties groups as well. They go by different acronyms. But the ACLU is by far and away the most well-known of all civil liberties groups. They're concerned. Why? Because in New Jersey, at least as it stands, according to the appeals court, if you are overtly religious, you can, for that reason, and that reason alone, be barred from serving on a jury. The court's majority determined that Lloyd Fuller was not deprived of a fair trial when the prosecutor used two of his challenges to exclude potential jurors on the grounds that religious people would be too sympathetic to the defense in his case. Now, I don't know if a prosecutor has to give reasons for each one of his exclusions, but if you know anything about the jury selection, especially in cases involving felonies and not just other crimes, both sides are allowed certain exclusions or exceptions when choosing a jury. They can exercise them. They don't have to, but they can. So they can get what they think is the most impartial jury that they can get for a trial. Apparently, if you're overtly religious, that's good enough. Fuller, 22, of Newark, was convicted of using a water pistol in a botched armed robbery. Well, for heaven's sakes, if you can use a water pistol, you're not going to get very far in an armed robbery. I mean, you can fool people into thinking it's a real gun, but he was accused of using a water pistol in a botched armed robbery of an Essex County Chinese restaurant and sentenced to 10 years in prison. He appealed, claiming that the juror removals violated his 14th Amendment rights to equal protection under the law. The majority of the panel of the Appellate Division of State Superior Court disagreed, finding that individuals perceived as devout do not comprise a specific group. Now, this is interesting reasoning. In other words, they are saying, we're going to say that religious people can be excluded for that reason and reason alone, but we're going to also say that we are not going to call them a specific group, because if we do, of course, we open ourselves to the charge of encouraging discrimination of religious people. They said that the controlling case in New Jersey only forbids a prosecutor to excuse jurors, quote, who are members of a cognizable group on the basis of their presumed group bias. Now, I do not know what these cognizable, or one might say known, groups are, according to New Jersey law. But if you're religious, you're not one of them, and so we're not discriminating against you for barring you from jury selection because you're overtly religious. The prosecutor during Fuller's trial bounced a white man who said he was a missionary and a black man wearing a long black garment and a skull cap. Neither potential juror was asked about his religious beliefs, but the prosecutor later said that the black man was, quote, obviously a Muslim. After the defense objected, the prosecutor told the trial judge that, quote, people who tend to be demonstrative about their religions tend to favor defendants to a greater extent than do persons who are, shall we say, not as religious. They may very well tend to be more accepting of a person's profession of innocence in the face of facts to the contrary, the prosecutor argued. In other words, at least according to this prosecutor, overtly religious people tend to believe people when they say they're innocent, even when the facts go against them. That is permissible, said appellate judge Joseph Lisa, who wrote, quote, individuals who are demonstrative about their religion do not share, listen to this, individuals who are demonstrative about their religion do not share the same values, tenets, or practices, and thus do not represent a cross-section of society. I'm trying to figure out what he means there. Whether or not he saying that religious, overtly religious people do not represent the population in general, or that because they're not uniform in their beliefs or values, they don't represent a group per se. Appellate Judge Dorothea Welfing concurred, but Appellate Judge Rose Fuentes said that the challenge violated not only Fuller's right to equal protection, that's the challenge, but also, he added, the potential juror's First Amendment right to the exercise, a free exercise of religion. Now, honestly, folks, I think that second is bogus. Being barred from serving on a jury because you're religious has nothing to do with the free exercise of your religion. You can still freely exercise your religion. This is a 14th Amendment issue for those who are being, whose cases are being considered. But I said before the break, and maybe this is representative of religious people in general, or maybe it's just the general population, jury duty is no fun. And most people do anything they can to get out of it. And I mentioned before that when I was called up for jury duty, I went with my clerical collar on. And I'll be quite honest, it was because I didn't want to be chosen, and I had a suspicion that prosecutors or defense attorneys would see the clerical collar and say, this is a guy who tends to see the world in moral terms. And if they thought that would be to their benefit, maybe they'd try for me, but the other person would certainly say no. And so I would get out of it. And my hope was I'd be chosen early on. You see, I couldn't bring the clerical collar and slap it on after they chose me. That would be funny. Who knows, the bailiff might beat me about the head or shoulders. I don't know. But my goal was to be chosen early and then dismissed, and I could go home. I wouldn't have to return to the pool. Because if they picked you and then they dismissed you for whatever reason, you can go home. As it is, I was not chosen. I sat there for 5 days. Serves me right. The phone numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I asked before, do you agree or disagree with Governor George Ryan's decision to commute 167 death penalty cases? Not the cases, the convictions. I wonder what he's going to do with all those who are up for capital crimes now, whose trials are being heard now. You see, he doesn't have power over that, but he can commute sentences once they're made. And I suspect death row will fill up again in due time. But the families seem to feel that justice is not done. Here's something telling he said in those remarks we played for him at the beginning of this hour of Open Lines. He said he was shocked by the fact that the families were angry. And he said to a family, they talked about closure, one of these famous buzzwords of our modern age. And then he said that these families wanted these people on death row to die, or the person convicted of the crime with which they had a connection to die, so that they could have some sense of closure. And then he asked, I will say almost sanctimoniously, you heard it, but is that the reason, I paraphrased just a bit, but is that the reason for the death penalty, to give victims' families closure? What do you think? I want to know what you think. Is that, among other reasons, justice, of course, being the biggest one, is closure a factor in a death penalty case? The fact that a family gets closure. This man, this woman, whoever they may be, will never walk free again. They have no chance of ever doing this to anyone again. Is closure a factor? George Ryan seems to poo-poo that idea. What do you think? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Keith is calling from Wycliffe, Virginia, listening on the internet. Keith, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hello?
Hello.
Are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. I was just wanting to, I think you mentioned that you wore your collar in part because you didn't want to serve on the jury.
Yeah.
Is that what I heard? I'm a prosecutor, and I'm sitting here in my office working late. It's after 5 here on Eastern time. But, we really need good people on juries.
I agree.
And
would you have chosen me?
I would have. I think I would have chosen you. You may have gotten struck by a defense attorney. You may have.
May or most certainly?
Almost certainly.
Okay.
I can't imagine a kind of a case that they wouldn't strike you. Just based on your occupation. All the good people that really care, all the moral people out there need to be on juries, because we have a real problem, at least in Virginia, and I'm sure in Missouri it's the same situation, where a lot of the best jurors, the kind of people that you really want on juries, who are, smart and moral and fair-minded, don't want to serve because they're too busy, raising their families or working or whatever they've got to do.
Well, Keith, and let me just simply support everything you said at this point. Stay here, because I got a question for you.
Sure.
There is, I was not admitting this by way of gloating or boasting. I don't know if I'm ashamed or not. I did it, and I didn't want to serve jury duty. I was, well, I'll just be quite honest. It was cutting into my time in a major way, but I agree with you. Mm-hmm. We need the very best. I've heard horror stories from people who have come back after serving jury duties on serious cases, and they said that when they went back for deliberations, I've heard two stories from individuals I know who said when time came for deliberation, the major motivation on the jury was, let's just get this thing over
with.
Whatever it is, we don't care what we decide. We don't care what the evidence is, really. People sleeping.
Right.
And finally, people voting however they had to vote just to get out of there as quickly as possible. And I will say, my favorite movie, old movie of all time, 12 Angry Men.
Yeah.
Is, if you ever want to know what, you know, what, how important it is that someone of moral conviction sit on a jury and maybe be able to get something good done, then you watch that movie, 12 Angry Men. Before I let you go, I'd like your reaction. You've certainly heard of former Governor George Ryan's decision on Saturday to commute 167 death penalty inmates, their sentences. What do you make of that?
Well,
a prosecutor,
I think as a prosecutor, as someone who has to go in the courtroom and stand up for the rights of people who've been victimized, I think it's a horrible, horrible thing. I think, you know, one comment that I heard him make was that these defendants are from disadvantaged backgrounds and so on, and have all these strikes against them. Well, how much more so the victim who's dead? And typically these killers victimize people in their own social and economic stratum, and it just says a horrible thing. You mentioned closure for the victims' families a few minutes ago, and I think that's just a point that is lost on so many people. I mean, doing this job now, I've been a prosecutor about 9 years now, and you know, the effect of a murder case on the family is just, it's hard to compare it with anything. And so I think it's a horrible decision. I think it's very much an anti-victim, anti-justice decision. And, you know, the scripturally we're told that God doesn't want the innocent to be convicted or the guilty to go free. So, and I can't think of that. I think that's in Psalms or Proverbs, one or the other.
But. One other question, Keith, and then I will let you leave. As a prosecutor, someone within the system, would you agree that, and I know you can't talk about the Illinois system, but in general, the death penalty systems in the states that have it, would you agree that it is as error-prone as Governor Ryan's decision seems to indicate?
No, absolutely not. And in fact, you hear the anti-death penalty advocates say, you know, all the reversals in Illinois mean that it's not working properly. And Virginia doesn't have very many reversals on appeal, so it can't be working properly in Virginia. Well, they can't have it both ways. You know, either the reversals on appeal mean that it's not a workable system, or the lack of reversals mean that, you know, I mean, you can't have it both ways.
Sure.
I don't think it's nearly as error prone. I think that shows a lack of confidence in the police, the judges, the jurors, and the prosecutors. You know, the prosecutors, I mean, unless they're taking bribes or something to falsely, you know, bring charges, which I couldn't imagine any circumstance where that would be the case. I mean, they're looking at these cases pretty hard before they even bring them, because of the massive amount of resources that have to be devoted to them. So I don't agree.
Well, Keith, thank you very much for calling from and listening on the internet in Virginia. And let me say that not only do we need good, fair-minded, ethical jurors, I'm also glad that at least it appears in your case we have good, fair-minded, ethical lawyers as well.
We try.
Thank you. Our phone numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Now, here's the comment from Governor Ryan that we're talking about here, the closure comment. Let's just play it for you real quick.
I was struck by the anger of the families of murder victims. To a family, they talked about closure. They pleaded with me to allow the state to kill an inmate in its name to provide the families with closure. But is that the purpose of capital punishment?
Now, I think this is a disingenuous statement. The more I hear it, the more disingenuous I believe it to be. And because time is winding down, I won't mince words. Certainly the families will plead for closure. They're making an emotional appeal to the governor. Don't commute these sentences, because you will leave us with no opportunity for closure. But he makes it sound as though that was their only reason for wanting the death penalty to be carried out. That justice had no hand to play in this. Or that they're concerned for other people who may be victimized later. Or just, quite frankly, perhaps other reasons for thinking that this is a just sentence for the crime committed. Behind all of this, the card that he is not showing, that Governor Ryan is not showing, but has shown in the past, is precisely his belief that half of these people are innocent. And that the system is so error-prone. But he doesn't talk about that. And you notice he doesn't mention that any victim family came to him saying, this person is guilty. Which I'm sure they did. And since he can't answer, well, no, I believe them to be innocent, he couldn't answer that way, of course. That would be so rude. When they beg for closure, when they beg that the sentence that has been justly and lawfully carried out, as far as we can tell, when they beg for that sentence to be carried out, he accuses them of simply wanting to satiate an emotional need by having the state, as he says, kill someone in its name. The death penalty is certainly killing. Let's not, in the broadest sense, let's not make any mistake about that. People die when the death penalty is carried out. But it is not killing in the same sense that a murder is killing. And it's not killing in the same sense that abortion is killing. And it's not killing in the same sense that manslaughter is killing. If the death penalty has its purpose in seeing that justice is done in the face of these crimes, then the sentence needs to be carried out. If there's a question as to the innocence or doubts as to the guilt of the person, the way to do that is through the appeal. As far as I know, and maybe I'm wrong, people on death row have ample opportunity for appeal. Ample. The argument may be, well, if we wait long enough, maybe some scientific method might be developed that would allow this person to, on appeal, have their conviction overturned. DNA testing is one of those things that's come on the scene. And it's done a couple reversals. But I simply do not see, even if the system is error-prone, how we can overturn the decisions of 167 juries or more, because there have been appeals below that level. How we can overturn what we should broadly interpret as the collective will of the people of the state of Illinois. I live there. When someone dies by lethal injection, they are doing it in my name. That's what we call the consent of the governed. That's what we call government of, by, and for the people. You know, Keith called for good, moral, ethical, sound-minded jurors. I commended him for good, moral, ethical, sound-minded lawyers. Maybe what we need is good, moral, ethical, and sound-minded governors, too. When we come back, Gretchen Pasentino will talk about the Raelians.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
The Apostles' Creed is a confession of faith almost as old as the Christian church itself. What does this ancient creed have to say to Christians today? And does the church still need creeds? For answers to these questions, I recommend a new book called To All Eternity, The Essential Teachings of Christianity. Here's how you order this great new resource. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, and under the What's New section, you'll find a link to Concordia Publishing House. Or call 1-800-325-3040 and ask to receive the Issues Etc. Book of the Month, To All Eternity, The Essential Teachings of Christianity. 1-800-325-3040 during regular business hours. Or go to our website, issuesetc.org, click What's New, and there you'll find information on how to order To All Eternity.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Bob Dittmer. Some Senate Republicans are trying to make a statement when it comes to the marriage tax penalty. In the last session of Congress, the president signed into law a bill that would temporarily do away with the penalty starting in 2005. But Republicans want it gone now and gone for good. David Brody reports.
What we're trying to do is make a firm statement.
Kay Bailey Hutchinson is on a mission. She's appalled at the idea that married couples pay more taxes than if they file separately.
48% of married couples pay a marriage penalty. We're talking about 46 million married couples in this country, and we are very concerned that this is something that will affect every middle-income person and every low-income person.
Hutchinson has introduced a bill that would end the penalty right away, and the bill would also make it permanent. As it stands now, it's set to revert back to the old way in 10 years.
It is both a good idea and helpful to the president's agenda.
Grover Norquist is with Americans for Tax Reform. He says the president wants the marriage penalty to end right away, but his version would not necessarily end the tax forever.
It's important to get rid of the marriage tax penalty as soon as possible, and Kay Bailey has been a leader of arguing for abolition to the extent that she is highlighting the importance of this.
Clearly, it will be President Bush's tax package that makes the rounds first in the Senate, so it's not clear if Hutchinson's plan will make it into law. But maybe it will turn up the heat on senators to make them vote for permanent marriage tax relief, something that at this point is up in the air. For Family News and Focus, I'm David Brody in Washington.
The proposal would increase the standard deduction for married couples by $1,550. Senators who are co-sponsoring the bill say it would result in about $574 in tax savings for the average family. For Family News in Focus, I'm Bob Dittmer.
Well, you missed your favorite KFUO program again, didn't you? You wanted to sit down and make time, but something came up. Well, you can listen on demand at KFUO.org. Favorite programs like the Bible Study, Living Jubilee, Issues, etc., just to name a few, are available on demand when you're available to listen. KFUO.org. It's your place to sit back and listen, even if it's 3 o'clock in the morning. So log in to KFUO.org today or tonight.
How would you like to increase your current income and provide a significant gift to KFUO? A charitable remainder unit trust from the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod Foundation could provide you with certain tax benefits as well as increased income now. Real estate gifted through the foundation can be sold without paying capital gains tax, and the money from the sale is invested to provide a lifetime income to you. If you'd like to learn more, call Janelle Flerke at 1-888-930-4438.
Welcome back. With open lines under our belt, we're going to move on to the issue, another issue that is in the news. It came out over the holiday season. Not exactly the kind of Christmas or New Year's story that people were expecting, but of course, if you were following the Raelians, you might have been expecting this. They've been saying for some years now that they're trying to clone a human baby, and over the New Year, they said they had done it. Who are the Raelians? What are they all about? And why are they so concerned about cloning a human baby? And how likely is it that they actually have accomplished what they say they've accomplished? We're going to talk about that during this half hour of Issues Etc. up until the top of the hour with Gretchen Pasentino, co-founder of Answers in Action, based in Costa Mesa, California. If you'd like to join us with a question or a comment, those phone numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Gretchen, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Oh, thank you, Todd. It's good to talk to you in the new year.
Who in the world, or perhaps if I take them seriously in their claims, outside of this world, who in the world are the Raelians?
Raelians actually are a religious group started in the 1970s by a Frenchman who used to be a pro-am car racer and also dabbled in the stock market and a few other different enterprises before he started his own cult. And he believes that, or he teaches that extraterrestrials talked with him and told him that humanity is the result of a scientific experiment begun by extraterrestrials 25,000 years ago with spores that were planted on this earth to develop humanity. And Rael, the leader of the group, he uses the ending of his name, El, to stand for God, meaning he is a product of the gods or the people, these extraterrestrials coming and producing humanity here. Rael says that his group are the only ones who are enlightened to understand the true history of humanity, the true purpose of humanity in preparing a new master race for the extraterrestrials, and they are the only ones that the extraterrestrials will continue to communicate with as they conduct their laboratory experiments.
And beyond just this kind of cosmological explanation for the origins of human life, what are other distinctive beliefs that the Raelians seem to hold, especially those things pertaining to cloning?
Well, what's really interesting is that they don't really have a whole lot of religion involved in their group. They used to have a booth at the nation's largest New Age fair in San Francisco during the 1980s, and we used to take a witnessing team there to the New Age fair every year and witness to all the New Agers. And every time we talked with them, what the talk usually got around to had very little to do with, does God exist? If God exists, what is God like? What's our relationship to him? How are we reconciled to God? What is, is there life after death or anything like that? But it pretty much all boiled down to the fact that to be a proper laboratory experiment, humans ought to copulate as frequently as possible within the confines of the group's structure. So if you were a young guy and interested in making it with a lot of young women, this was the perfect cult for you in the 1980s. So it doesn't really have much to do with cloning as far as a scientific process of reproducing people, but the cult is heavily focused on recruiting new members and spending quite a lot of time in activities that the rest of us would think don't have a whole lot to do with religious practices.
And why are they so intent, or at least claim to be so intent, on cloning a human baby?
Well, actually, a few years ago, about a decade ago, they came out with a report that they had cloned a human being, and this was before any cloning had actually been done successfully, even with any invertebrate animals, much less any mammals. They said that was part of the process that the extraterrestrials were trying to teach them so that we could, in our own turn, produce a new species of life that could inhabit a new planet and so spread the kind of the gospel of the extraterrestrials from planet to planet throughout the universe. Now, in the last 2 years, they've started a new organization called Clone Aid, which is a nonprofit research organization founded by, funded by, and staffed by the Raelians and their leadership. And this organization is supposed to be an independent scientific laboratory, but it really is just a front organization for the cult.
How big is the Raelian movement?
It's not very big at all. They really don't publish any membership statistics, and it's very difficult to tell how many are actually involved. But it's almost certainly under 5,000 worldwide, probably only a couple of hundred people in the actual top leadership of the group. But what's really interesting is that as with the same plan that went on about a decade ago, they came to the front in the press by their supposed scientific prowess and ability to produce things scientifically, and yet they used that alleged ability to recruit large financial donors, and this is what they've done with Clone Aid. They've gotten people involved who want to be cloned themselves or who have had the tragic loss of a child or someone else close to them that they want cloned to try to recover the life of, say, your dead 5-year-old child who died from disease, and if you can take a healthy cell from that child and preserve it and then clone it, then you can get your child back. And by taking huge financial investments from these people in the Clone Aid project, they have literally walked into control of millions of dollars.
So they have the money, apparently, or at least enough money, to try and pull these things off. How credible do you think, Gretchen, their claim to have cloned one and now they say two human babies is?
I'm not a scientist, so I can't speak with any authority from that perspective, but I can say, having watched the group over the years and having watched groups like it and having read quite a lot about the subject in the mainstream press and in some of the lay-level scientific journals, I don't think they've done it. I don't think they've done it now any more than they did a decade ago. The ethical problems involved in human cloning are such that I know of no reputable scientific organization today that is ready to try to clone humans. The very act you have to go through in order to come up with a viable embryo to bring to fruition ends up in literally hundreds of fertilized eggs and embryos being destroyed that have gross abnormalities and genetic malfunctions because of the very cloning process itself. And that's with the lower forms of mammalian life. To the best of my knowledge, no one has successfully cloned any primate form of life. And even in the subprimate forms of life, there are many, many failures for every one that seems to be a success, meaning that you have a live birth. But in the case of Dolly the sheep, for example, she has all kinds of physiological and chemical and hormonal problems now as a result of being a clone. And we found this to be the case with nearly all of the other animals that have been cloned, too.
Now, I'm interested in this, in the angle that's being forged here. By the Raelians. We had a caller in the previous hour during Open Lines who said, look, this is just a grab for publicity. But it seems to me a grab for publicity, certainly, that could backfire in a major way by way of credibility. Or do you think the Raelians and Rael himself really care about credibility if their claim to have cloned a baby turns out to be a hoax?
Well, there are a couple of factors in this. Not merely publicity. You can take your clothes off and run down the street and you'll get publicity, but not many people who want publicity are willing to do something like that. Financial investment, certainly they're getting a lot out of that, and there are people who are going to be taken and burned and who won't donate to them again, but in the meantime they've had the use of their money. But I think far more than that is a drive to see their own goals brought to fruition so much that they're willing to do practically anything that's necessary in order to reach those goals. And whether those goals are great financial mobility or great social control over their individual members or whatever it might be, they seem to be willing to do whatever is necessary to reach that goal. And it's hard for us, especially for us as Christians, to think about someone setting aside his ethics, setting aside his conscience to the extent that no matter what else happens, he's going to do what it takes to reach his goal. And so, they were exposed a decade ago for their false promises of scientific prowess, and here they are this decade doing it again. And it wouldn't surprise me if a decade from now they do it again. In fact, I got a request from another media source to do a report on the Raelians cloning story a couple of weeks ago, and I declined to do it because I said, no, they're doing this for publicity and money. They're not doing it because they've really cloned anybody. And the more attention you give to them, the more you're feeding into their actual goals rather than what you think their goals are, which is getting people to believe credibly that they've actually cloned somebody.
So that you are convinced that the goal of Rael and the Raelians is not to somehow further medical science. I mean, the whole notion that people are talking about with cloning and embryonic stem cell research, they're not concerned with improving the state of medical research. They're concerned with, if not their credibility, their coffers.
Well, it certainly works for today, and for everybody who's burned today, there's somebody tomorrow who hasn't burned yet, who is ready for that telemarketer or ready for that bogus salesman or for whatever other kind of a false story may come down the line that gullible people are willing to fall for. And I can't say that I know the motives of the Raelians. I don't. I've never met any of them personally, other than, from a witnessing perspective. And I really, can't say what the ethics are that are going on in their hearts, but I can say from looking at their practices and looking at their past track record, they appear to be the kind of people who will continue doing the same kind of sensationalistic sham over and over and over again, because there's always somebody who's going to believe it, at least in the beginning, at least long enough to cough up a large number of dollars, at least long enough to be a faithful follower for at least a time period.
I know I'm asking you to speculate, but you have watched this kind of thing for decades now, Gretchen. Not only with the Raelians, but with others. Do you think that Rael believes his own story? that he traveled to Elohim in a spaceship, that he hears from the aliens, that he's got it all straight.
Well, it's interesting. My husband and I were talking about this just the other day, and we were talking to some friends about it, and Bob was saying how he had witnessed to some of the young followers back in the 1980s in San Francisco at the New Age Fair. And he said that he had tried for about an hour to get them interested in ideas about, does God exist? Is there life after death? How can we relate to God? Is there any way God can speak to us? And what it really boiled down to after an hour of discussion was one very frustrated Christian who really cared about God and four young guys who thought this was a great way to have a lot of sex.
I'm looking at a picture in Newsweek, this week's Newsweek, and I think it's Rail himself standing on a little platform. In front of him, with resolution too poor to show any detail, of course, seated in the grass near their compound, I think in Quebec. No, this is in France in 1991. What appears to be several hundred nude women. This is modus operandi? Is this the modus operandi of Rail and the Raelians?
Yes, it is. That's exactly the case. And yes, they did. They also had branches in Canada, too, at that time, too. I'm not sure if they still do today. And frenzied copulation is not necessarily for reproductive purposes, but frenzied copulation is one of the main teachings and main practices of the Raelians. And I think it's one of the reasons that the group continues to attract new members, even though when you look at it from the outside, you think this is bizarre, this is ridiculous, how could anybody believe this or do this? But you know, if you're a young guy, if you're impressionable, if it's hard to get a date, if you'd love to have your wildest sexual fantasy fulfilled, and somebody comes and tells you that God's going to do it for you and all you have to do is listen to this guy named Rael and follow him, well, there are people who are going to do that. In the same way, if you lose a child in a tragic illness or tragic accident, or if you fear death and you're getting old yourself or getting feeble yourself, and somebody holds out the offer of eternal life or renewed life, there are people who are going to buy it and who are going to buy into it, literally, financially, and also, tragically, emotionally, and spiritually, without looking too closely to find out the sham that it really is.
Even the most rudimentary understanding of the cloning process bears no indication whatsoever that this is a pathway to eternal life. The person would be a genetic duplicate, but a separate person entirely.
Yeah, the closest thing we could compare it to would be identical twinning. Identical twins share the same genetic material and came from the same fertilized egg, but they're separate individuals created in the image of God with separate souls, with a spiritual aspect that relates to God, with their own destinies, their own persons, their own consciences.
Do they believe the aliens are coming back?
I don't know whether they believe in the aliens at all. I certainly believe that, or they certainly teach that humanity is in a period of trial or testing. And as humanity develops more scientifically, as sexual intercourse becomes a more of a regular part of human activity, as the enlightened human beings continue communicating with the extraterrestrials and following their instructions for scientific experimentation and development of whole new life forms to populate new planets, they teach that that is being part of the extraterrestrial plan to populate the universe.
Back in 1997, Marshall Applewhite led 38 people to their deaths out in California. He promised them that through their suicides, they would be translated onto a secret spaceship following the Hale-Bopp comet. One of the saddest things to watch after this was the footage that was taken by the cult itself, the Heaven's Gate cult, of its members. And they looked a little odd, strange haircuts and strange clothes, seemed a little subdued. Applewhite was an odd bird, without a doubt. But the families of these people who killed themselves in this suicide cult said, at one time, my son, my daughter, was an ordinary person. They were smart. They weren't stupid. They weren't gullible. How do people get drawn into this?
They get drawn in very slowly, step by step, line by line, promise by promise, mistake by mistake. And I think that's something we need to remember as Christians. It's not likely that we will go to sleep with the Lord's words on our lips as we fall asleep and wake up in the morning raving deep in sin. But it is very likely that the tempter will slide us a slight little temptation, a little fudge, a little compromise on the truth, a little extra step that's not really ethical, and we take the first step, and then the second step, and then the third step, and before we know it, we're embroiled in sin, and we're trapped, and we have to cry out to God for forgiveness and for rescue from sin. In the same way, people get involved in cults. They don't set out thinking, let's see, I want to go find a real bizarre religious organization that'll turn me into a strange person my family won't recognize and make me the laughingstock of the community. No, they don't do that. But they go out looking for God, looking for a relationship with God, looking for reconciliation with God, and yet not following the path that God has already given us in His Word and through His Son, Jesus Christ. And by entertaining a false statement here about ethics, a false statement there about who God is, a false statement there about what behavior really is sin or is not sin, step by step, little by little, we get led down into the path of falseness until, as Paul tells us in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, even a demon can appear like an angel of light.
What place does Jesus, at least in name, occupy in Raelian teaching?
He was a prophet and a good teacher, but he was greatly misunderstood by his followers, and certainly the records that we have in the New Testament are not accurate records of who Jesus really was.
So would there be a parallel drawn between Rael himself, who claims to have come to bring eternal life through the cloning process, and who they believe Jesus to be?
Actually, Rael is superior to Jesus Christ because he understood the communication from the extraterrestrials. He was obedient to them, and he is training his followers to perform the activities and the scientific research that the extraterrestrials demanded that Jesus evidently failed to perform.
So Jesus didn't understand when the aliens were talking to him?
That's right.
What about others? Muhammad, any other figures of history, do they figure into the theology or the history, the claimed history of the Raelians?
Well, there's very little written Raelian theology or written Raelian religious writing, and so it's very difficult to tell exactly what they would believe about any particular religious leader like Confucius or Buddha or Muhammad. But they do believe that Rael is the only one who truly understands the genuine origin of humanity, who is in direct communication with the extraterrestrials, and who alone has the pathway to the bright new future of scientific reproduction and colonization of other planets.
I'm reading a story here. This is from the Associated Press. I got it from the Minneapolis Star Tribune. Here's the headline, and I find it elsewhere as well in Newsweek and Time. When it comes to cloning claim, no known religion backs Raelians. The story by Richard Osling simply says, of all religions known to man at this particular point in history, there are none except the Raelians that are advocating reproductive cloning of human beings on an active, ongoing basis. Is that your take here?
Yes, I'm sure that's the case, because all of the major world religions have a respect for human life and for the uniqueness of human life that understands that life comes from God, is directed by God, and has its care and its consequences in God's hands and not in our own hands. And certainly we would disagree as Christians with how some of that is played out in some of the other different world religions. But all the world religions do have a respect for the uniqueness of human life and humanity created in God's image. In the Raelian worldview, we're a scientific experiment. A scientific experiment can certainly be improved upon at any time.
What is the greatest danger? I mean, most people see this as so on the fringe, be it Heaven's Gate or today it's the Raelians. What is the greatest danger to the average Christian in what we've been hearing in the news? Or is there any? Is this just a fringe thing?
It is a fringe thing, and in some ways I hate to give it any more publicity than it's already getting, because that's part of the purpose of what they're doing, is simply to generate publicity, because the more people you can contact, the more likely you are to run across the ones who are gullible enough to fall for what you're selling. But in the same way, I think we need to be careful of two very important things here. First of all, for someone to be recruited into a really bizarre cult, even something as bizarre as the Raelians, who believe that we are products of extraterrestrial scientific experimentation, doesn't happen all at once, but is a slow, step-by-step process when we begin to compromise our faith, when we turn away from the truth that's in God's Word, when we fail to cling to Jesus Christ and His reconciliation of us with God the Father, then we become vulnerable to these false philosophies and false religions. Secondly, when we are going through enormous human trauma ourselves, the death of a loved one, prospects of our own death or critical illness, we become vulnerable to anyone who says, I have the solution to the future. I can give you the future on a silver platter. I can guarantee eternal life for you. But there's only one who can guarantee the future and only one who can guarantee eternal life. And that's Jesus Christ, not Rael, not any cloning process, not any other world religion or religious figure in the world.
One last question with only about a minute and a half here, Gretchen. What if, now you said that the Raelians, you seriously doubt their claim to have cloned anybody, but what if they have, or what if in the next 5 or 6 years they do clone a human baby? Would that provide any kind of proof for their other claims?
No, it wouldn't. It would simply be, at the very most, what it could do is to show that it takes an incredibly intelligent, incredibly talented, incredibly experienced, and incredibly well-equipped designer to produce from living material more living material. If anything, this points us to the great designer, the eternal designer, God himself, who made the heavens and the earth and who created man in his own image. No one can create out of nothing but God himself.
Gretchen, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you.
Gretchen Pasentino is co-founder of Answers in Action, based in Costa Mesa, California. You can check out the website for Answers in Action by visiting our website at issuesetc.org. That's issuesetc.org. Under the section titled Links with Regular Guests, you're going to find a direct link to Bob and Gretchen Pasentino and Answers in Action. Or if you'd like to receive Bob and Gretchen's free Answers in Action newsletter, you can call them at area code 949-646-9042. That's 949-646-9042. When we come back from this break, we'll be spending an hour with Pastor Eric Rotman talking about the Ten Commandments. He's co-author of the new book. It's our Issues Etc. Book of the Month. To All Eternity, the Essential Teachings of Christianity. I'm glad to be able to follow an hour on the, or a half hour on the Raelians with an hour on the truth of Christianity. Because if the Raelians or Heaven's Gate or any of the other UFO cults that seem so far out on the fringe to the average person, if they can gather adherents from all over the world, I think it shows us one thing. That is the depth of our ability to be deceived and to deceive ourselves. And this is something that we should not ever become complacent about as Christians. Just because we're not a member of a UFO cult does not mean that we are still not in need of God's divine protection and the protection of His Word against other deceptions as well. We'll be right back.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.